This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, we have big news regarding non-citizens voting in Texas. We'll also take a close look at the committee assignments in the Texas House and what that tells us about the legislative session. For our interview, we've got part two of Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan's interview with Senator Ted Cruz. And we'll close with a commentary from Charles Blaine on why Republicans are short-sighted if we ignore urban voters. Coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas, this is Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. Follow me on Twitter at TweetTonyMac. You can find us on the web, www.texasscorecard.com. If catching us on the radio, go online and subscribe to our podcast. We're on all of your favorite podcasting platforms, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, all of those platforms. You can subscribe there. Never miss a program. With this week's top story, big news about election integrity, I've got Aaron Anderson with the Metroplex Bureau for Texas Scorecard. I've also got Brandon Waltons, Capital Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. The Secretary of State coming out and saying, hey, we have a serious problem with non-citizens on the Texas voter rolls.
A very serious problem, Tony, and a very shocking report. We had the Secretary of State, which is Texas's top election official, saying, you know, as many as 95,000 individuals identified in the Department of Public Safety's database as non-citizens are registered to vote. And the kicker there, 58,000 of them possibly voted already.
In previous elections. Yeah, Aaron, you know, you've been writing about this issue of election integrity. You're kind of our resident expert on election integrity issues. You've been writing about this for a while, and the shocking thing is it seems no one is doing the homework here to say, hey, do people who register to vote, are they actually qualified to be voting?
Well, that's right, Tony, and I think many Texans have been surprised to learn that no one verifies the citizenship of people registering to vote. They simply check a box on the form that says, yes, I'm a U.S. citizen, and that's it. Nobody's ever checked before.
Yeah, and so here you have a Secretary of State coming in saying, I want to cross-reference certain records that the state has, records of people who are registered to vote, and cross-reference those against other records that say, okay, this person might not be qualified to vote as a non-citizen, they're looking into this. You would think, Brandon, that people would be like, oh, yeah, of course, right? You know, non-citizen, we don't want people who aren't qualified to vote. I mean, this is like a felony if these people vote. Everybody would be united. Yeah, this is a huge problem. We need to fix this problem. But we've seen a lot of folks on the left trying to downplay this issue.
Yes, unsurprisingly. I mean, you had State Representative Chris Turner, who not just a Democrat state representative, but actually the head of the House Democrat caucus in the Texas House, going out and just saying, oh, this is false, nothing to see here, putting stuff out on Twitter.
Sure. President Trump had had promoted this news story, saying, hey, this is a big problem. And the Democrats immediately, I guess, kind of Trump hatred kind of thing, going, oh, this is all false, that isn't true. But they don't know whether this is true or not.
Well, yeah, and they don't know. And you had the liberal media as well. You had the lobby-funded Texas Tribune out there saying, saying this is not true, this is false. And, even once the Secretary of State sent those names to the counties and they got the chance to parse through their own records, you had the Fort Worth Star-Telegram actually putting out a headline saying, 20% of these names didn't belong on the list. Well, that means 80% did.
80%. There is an issue with 80%. So back to you, Aaron. There's a whole process here. They're going to have to get to the bottom of this, of are these people, maybe they've become citizens? I mean, these are non-citizens who maybe on a green card or something like that. Maybe they've become citizens, so maybe they are qualified now. But, you know, the records the state has says, no, they're not supposed to be voting.
Well, that's right, Tony. This is actually a long overdue look back at the current state of the voter rolls to try to see if we can find what the status is of these people. And we're using a DPS database, which includes lawfully present non-citizens. These aren't illegal aliens. We don't have a database of them. So people who have applied for a license or ID through DPS and presented their documents that they're lawfully present non-citizens, bumped against the voter rolls, and we see that, what, tens of thousands have indeed registered. A good portion of those have voted. Some may have become citizens since then. And that's what the Secretary of State is asking the county registration officials to check out so we can get the rolls clean going back. Now, going forward, we'll have to find a solution to continue to check on the back end before we get people on the rolls who aren't eligible.
Well, Brandon, you know, what can people be doing to actually address this? Do they need to call their local election administrator and you know, tell them, hey, we need you to clean up the rolls?
Well, yes, absolutely. That helps. And also, you've got some legislation making its way through the Texas legislature to empower the Secretary of State to check citizenship before, you know, people register to vote.
Yeah. So a lot of reforms there. We'll have to see what comes of this, but certainly a big story, something that will be important to the state moving forward.
Absolutely.
Next, let's turn our focus to the Texas Capitol and talk with Carrie Cheshire, Vice President for Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. New House Speaker Dennis Bonin appointing the committees in the Texas House of Representatives, and there's a lot to read into that.
That's right, Tony. Perhaps our first look into the policy goals of House Speaker Dennis Bonin is his committee assignments recently made in the Texas House. 34 committees, number of individuals being promoted, number of individuals being demoted, and I think conservatives across the state are pretty pleased by what's resulted.
Yeah, and so Dennis Bonin coming in, replacing outgoing liberal Republican Speaker Joe Strauss, notorious each session for appointing committees that really marginalized the most conservative members of the House of Representatives, really to the maximum degree, ensuring that conservatives would not have the votes on really any committee, ensuring that conservative members would not be on any of the more powerful committees, ensuring that conservative members would not be on any of the procedural committees. A big change in these assignments.
That's right, Tony. What we saw was really a merit-based process where the House Speaker, Dennis Bonin, met individually with almost each and every member. You saw, you know, kind of people naturally ensconce themselves into their issue areas. You saw a number of conservatives take seats, you know, on powerful committees such as appropriations and elections and ways and means, things that we'll talk about later. But really an end of open hostilities and an end of the abuse of the committee process to punish conservative
members. Yeah, like in last session we had seen Matt Rinaldi, a suburban, urban conservative lawmaker placed on the Agriculture Committee, which is a committee some people really want to be on, right? That was a spot that is a pretty prized, but it was used just for vindictiveness purposes. Mm-hmm. Didn't see that sort of thing this time around. Also, really interesting, the timing of the committee assignments coming out pretty quick. In the past, Speaker Strauss would delay the appointments of the committees for as much as 30 days, and that shortened the calendar, and we're seeing a lack of that kind of apparent intentional delay under Bonin.
Well, that's right, Tony. As we've written at TexasScorecard.com, in the Texas legislative process, delay is death. And while Joe Strauss was the Speaker of the Texas House, he used kind of his bully pulpit to delay the committee assignments by, you know, perhaps 2 weeks longer than Dennis Bonin did, just to give them additional time to gum up the works, to stop conservative legislation from passing, so that then on the last day they can say, oh, well, we would have passed it. We
just ran out of time. Well, because you intentionally delayed the calendar. Big issues that are important in these committees and in the committee process, Speaker Bonin, Governor Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Patrick talking about school finance reform and property tax reform. They seem to have a good path through the committee process based on these appointments.
Yeah, absolutely. And a change from House Speaker Joe Strauss. You know, typically most committees have a one Republican majority. But here under Dennis Bonin, with these issues taking center stage, you look at the State Affairs Committee, you look at the Public Education Committee, you look at the Ways and Means Committee, these are stacked with solid Republican majorities that ought to be able to move just about any legislation through them.
Yeah, and of course you mentioned the Ways and Means Committee, which handles taxing issues, so property tax reform. Really good conservative
conservative leadership there and on some of the other committees as well.
Well, that's right, Tony. You know, Chairman of the House Republican Caucus, Dustin Burroughs of Lubbock, being appointed to chair the Ways and Means Committee, with him kind of being the quarterback of the Republican Caucus in the Texas House, there's probably no better spot than him taking the leading edge of property tax relief and property tax reform. And then you look at the other committees. You know, elections is a great example, stacked with conservative lawmakers that really ought to be able to move a lot of reform, much needed reform, through that committee on the heels of these revelations by the Texas Attorney General and Secretary of State.
Yeah, and so very important issue this session, election reform, and we have a committee that is able to work on that, so that's exciting. Well, thank you for your analysis of it, and we'll have to see what these committees do. Just because you have good personnel doesn't mean that you'll get good policy, but it's a good start.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Up next, we have part two of Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan's interview with Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Hope you enjoy.
The problem in Washington, and this is a shift, you know, even a few years ago, border security, you could get bipartisan cooperation on.
Right.
What has happened now, and it's really been the last 2 years, it's been since the election of Donald Trump, the extreme left, the crazy radical fringe, is ascendant in the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a party whose new superstar, she ran on a platform of abolishing ICE, right, abolishing the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. You know, my opponent in the Texas Senate race said he was open to abolishing ICE. Mm-hmm. When you have a party that is captive to, is listening to those extreme voices, they're for open borders. They don't want the border secure.
They don't want a country anymore.
And so that makes things highly dysfunctional. You know, I'm sure you watched this week the president's address to the country, which I thought he did a very fine job. Yep. And then afterwards, Schumer and Pelosi's address to the country, which I told Trump, I said you should send Pelosi 2 dozen roses, because with all due respect,
ask her to do it again.
I thought your speech was great, but theirs was much more effective for us than yours was. and if you looked at it, I mean, just the visual. I mean, look, the memes online have been fabulous, but to me, it looked like a hostage video. It looked like they were both, you know, being put out on grainy film, and this is the message to their captors. And by the way, I want to say to everyone watching, I'm virtually certain if you slow it down, you can see Nancy blinking SOS as Chuck's talks next to her. I go back and check on that, but I'm pretty sure that's there.
All right, so I want to shift gears. I know you've got a very busy day ahead of you. Shift from border security, another piece of legislation filed, actually a constitutional amendment to bring term limits to, you know, I've always said I hate the idea of term limits, the ballot box a term limit on, but the past several years have seen me shift fairly radically in that view to becoming a supporter of term limits. So tell us what your constitutional amendment proposes and why you have picked the numbers that you've picked.
Sure. So I filed a constitutional amendment to mandate term limits for Congress. Mm-hmm. It would limit members of the House to 3 2-year terms. Mm-hmm. It would limit members of the Senate to 2 6-year terms. And, you know, it's interesting. You expressed some skepticism of term limits and having some view of, well, gosh, shouldn't the people be able to decide? I understand those arguments, and I'm sympathetic to those arguments. I supported term limits coming into the Senate, but I got to say, since I've been there, I've been in the Senate now 6 years. I now support term limits 1,000 times more than I did when I first got elected. Right. And it's because when you see firsthand just how broken the place is, mm-hmm. You look at the effect of career politicians. And the dominant instinct in Washington is risk aversion.
Right.
In every lunch we have, what happens is people get elected to Congress and their overarching goal is, I must stay there. And so any big challenge, any big problem, when it comes up to a bold solution, when it comes up to doing what's necessary to actually address and fix the challenges facing this country, if you have politicians whose only concern is, I must be reelected, inevitably doing something big entails risk. And here's how the reasoning goes. No, that would be risky. And if it's risky, I might not get reelected. And if I'm not reelected, I'm no longer a senator. That line of thinking cripples Washington.
Right.
The virtue of term limits is it ends that. It would, I believe, substantially weaken the power of the lobbyists and special interests. And, you know, it's interesting. If you look outside of Washington, there is overwhelming bipartisan agreement for term limits. Over 80% mm-hmm. of Americans support term limits. Right. And the support, it's not just Republicans, it's independents, it's Democrats. Mm-hmm. A supermajority of Democrats support term limits. The only population in America that I know of that doesn't support term limits are career politicians in Washington.
535 people in Washington, D.C., yeah.
So I think in terms of big picture structural reforms, very few could have as fundamental an impact as term limits. And so I've introduced it, and I'm going to fight for it. I've fought for it in prior Congresses. This is a different environment. We may have more prospect of moving forward this Congress than we've had previously.
Outstanding. Okay, so you talked a minute ago about the kind of the grip of the career politicians and those things. So the reality is we've got a Republican, actually a couple extra Republicans from last term, but we have Nancy Pelosi in the House, all promising a sideshow circus there in the House.
Yeah.
How is the Senate going to operate without being dragged into the House circus?
Look, it's going to be a good question. I expect insanity from the other side of the Capitol. I think the Democratic caucus, their demons have been unleashed.
Right.
And I don't think they can put them back in the bottle. I think the consequence of that, you're going to see nonstop investigations, you're going to see nonstop subpoenas with an explicit purpose of crippling the Trump administration,
right,
of bankrupting young staffers who go work in the administration. And I think we're going to see impeachment. I think they're going to hold extended hearings and ultimately vote on articles of impeachment, at least against the president. They may well try to go after cabinet members. They may well go after Justice Brett Kavanaugh. I think all of those are possibilities that are on the table. And I think that's not good for the country.
Mm-hmm.
I think that extreme partisan rage that we're seeing on the left is harmful. In the Senate, I think you will see cooler heads prevail in the Senate. In the Senate, thankfully, we grew our Republican majority from 51 to 53. Mm-hmm. The good thing is that means we're still in the confirmation business.
Right.
So the most productive thing I expect the Senate to get done in the next 2 years is, I hope, confirm a crap ton of judges. That, by the way, is a technical legal term.
I believe I've seen that written somewhere.
You know, there's a flock of geese and a pride of lions. It's a crap ton of judges is the plural aggregate.
You're doubling down on that one, aren't you?
hey, if you're going to go with something, don't go a little bit. Go, you know, you either go all the way or don't mess around with it at all.
Well, and it's not just federal judges. I think, you know, there's a lot of other appointments that have been hanging out there for a while.
Executive appointments, and it's one of the challenges. Look, we have these cabinet secretaries who are sent often into very hostile executive agencies. And for many of them, their second level of command, their sort of mid-level political appointees that help them steer that battleship, are still waiting on Senate confirmation.
Right.
I am hopeful we speed that up and we get those confirmations through.
Good.
One of the reasons we need to focus on that is because I actually think big substantive legislation doesn't have much prospect of success the next 2 years. I think the crazy Democratic House, we're not passing another big tax cut like we did 2 years ago.
Right.
You know, look, Democratic House is talking about wanting to raise taxes to 70 or 75%. I mean, this is nutty stuff.
Right.
And by the way, that's only going to get fueled because we're obviously moving into another presidential cycle. And I think we'll have 20, we may have 30 credible Democrats running for president. And we've got in the Senate, I think it's virtually all of them.
All 48 want to run.
Like a shorter list of the three senators who are not running for president on the Democratic side. So what we're going to see, I don't know how they're going to do their debates. I mean, it's going to be, I suppose, amusing to watch.
Amusing to watch, but sad for our country. They're going to be looking to do the most horrible things they can possibly to obstruct the work that the Constitution says is supposed to happen.
But it will also be an effort to appease the crazy radical left that is both foolish and ignorant.
Right.
So they're embracing policies, socialism, free college, free health care, free homes, free cars, a chicken in every pot in Colorado, pot in every chicken. Look, young people, as you know well, Winston Churchill famously said, if you're 20 and not a liberal, you have no heart. If you're 40 and not a conservative, you have no brain. You look at a lot of this sort of democratic socialist movement, it's a lot of young people who, well, gosh, free stuff sounds good. I mean, you know, if you knocked at my door and said, would you like a Ferrari? I'd probably say yes. Yeah. Most people don't turn down free stuff. But you and I both know Margaret Thatcher summed it up beautifully where she said the problem with socialism is eventually you run out of other people's money.
Exactly right.
And it doesn't work. Their ideas, you want to see socialism, go look at Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
Go look at how they took a proud, prosperous, successful country and drove it into the ditch with disastrously failed policies. The Democratic primary is going to be a battle to see who can get us to Venezuela faster and louder.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's potentially dangerous for the country. It's potentially dangerous for Americans who aren't following this very closely, who just catch some of that debate and think, well, gosh, okay, those are the reasonable poles of debate. I think we have a responsibility as conservatives, something I take very, very seriously, throughout this crazy debate, to explain common sense.
Right.
To take the
opportunity.
Yes, to win people's hearts and minds. Freedom works. If you care about poverty, I care deeply about poverty. The most powerful enemy poverty has ever had in the history of the universe is the American free enterprise system.
Right.
And I will put the American free enterprise system against every dirtbag, communist, socialist, utopian, because they're all driven by naivete, and inevitably what those systems produce is brutal government authoritarianism.
Right.
You know, those loving utopian communists, you know, go talk to my family in Cuba that was imprisoned and tortured by the egalitarian ethos. What that means in practice, not in the ivory towers where everything is theoretical, in practice where you're dealing with real human beings, is the socialist or communist ethos is used to subjugate the masses. So the Communist Party can rule and live in abundant wealth. I mean, you know, Fidel Castro was a billionaire. Raul Castro is a billionaire.
Men of the people.
Putin is a billionaire. It is a powerful thing to use the machinery of government to rob and oppress the people and ironically, today, in today's Democratic Party, they embrace the same philosophies with none of the wisdom, none of the understanding. I support limited government precisely because I don't want the jackboots in Washington to have the power to take your liberty or my liberty. And we're fighting on the right side, but we need to connect with people's hearts and minds.
So we're coming up to the end of our time here together. Appreciate everyone joining us. Senator Cruz, thank you. You know, Ronald Reagan said, I think it was like in 74, 75 in a speech, that the American people don't want pastels, they want bold colors. And I think, you know, the point you've been making here this morning, you've been making for a long time, is we got to do bold things. And I know a lot of us greatly appreciate your willingness to be bold fighting for Texas, because ultimately that's what the people want. Is they want someone who's going to speak truthfully and boldly so we can have a better Texas and a better country.
So one of the more amusing and odd things that has happened since I was elected to Senate, there's a company in Missouri that for whatever reason has put out a coloring book of me. And it's bizarre. I mean, it has me wrestling snakes. And we had nothing to do with this.
We're I have a lot of coloring books. Them. I don't have this one.
And they sell it online, and we don't even get, like, royalties. I don't get a penny from the coloring book. I did go online. I actually bought two of the coloring books to give to my daughters because it had one of the things in the coloring book was a picture of Heidi and me and the girls. So how awesome is it to give your girls, all right, you get to color you. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But in it, when I have those, sometimes people will say, hey, will you sign it? And my signature on the coloring book is always paint in bold colors and not pale pastels.
Outstanding. Well, Senator Ted Cruz, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
If you missed part one of Michael's interview with Senator Cruz, you can find that in the Texas Scorecard Radio archives at texasscorecard.com.
What are you doing Sunday evening? With the Texas legislative session back in full swing, we're spending our Sundays making sure you are staying informed with Sunday Scorecard, a product of Texas Scorecard TV. Catch the Texas Scorecard team and guests every Sunday at 7:30 p.m. live on the Empower Texans Facebook page to hear the latest news from Austin, D.C., or even your local city governments. That's Sunday Scorecard, live Sundays at 7:30 p.m. throughout the legislative session. You can find show archives and more information at texasscorecard.com. Join the conversation this Sunday evening.
In this week's commentary, Charles Blaine explains why conservatives are short-sighted if we don't sell our solutions to the problems created by big government in urban areas.
While it may seem like cities are a lost cause for conservatives, they're not. They're ripe for reform, and we have to take advantage of that. With today's Texas Scorecard commentary, I'm Charles Blaine. There are hundreds of articles written about Republican campaigns and candidates during the recent midterm election. There are an equal amount of articles detailing the losses Republicans saw in many of the nation's major cities and urban areas. It's true, conservatives and Republicans have a hard time winning urban areas, but difficult doesn't mean impossible. We can win them, and it doesn't require us to change our values. The shared values that conservatives have grown used to finding in rural areas like faith, family, and freedom can easily be found in our cities as well. In many urban areas, the local church or house of worship is the cornerstone of the community. Not only does it provide a place for the devoted to worship, it acts as a charity, a safe haven, and a place to draw together an otherwise impersonal community. Many people move to urban areas for the freedom to provide better lives for their families. With the lower cost of housing, access to transportation, abundance of educational opportunities, and a bustling economy that enables families to climb out of poverty, cities provide the American dream for many who previously believed it was out of reach. Not only do many of the people share the same values, but conservatives are uniquely positioned to solve many of the problems occurring in our largest cities. Take housing, for instance. It's one of the most regulated industries in America today. Local governments determine what you can build on your property, how big or small, who can stay there and for how long, and in some instances, what color you can paint it. These regulations naturally drive up the cost of development and therefore housing. Conservatives have the solutions to that problem: less burdensome regulation, freer markets, and respect for property rights. Cities are also plagued by local officials' penchant for taxing, spending, and borrowing on the backs of taxpayers, all in an effort to feed a monstrous government that has for far too long exceeded its bounds. The current party has long been in power in cities and has no interest in limiting government, despite it being the biggest threat to the people they say they want to help. This provides an opportunity for Republican solutions. As local governments overreach, conservatives have the opportunity to lead citizens in fighting back. Cities are growing at a significant rate. Since 2000, 80% of the population growth in Texas has been in its major population areas, and it isn't expected to change. Cities are growing at a significant rate. Since 2000, 80% of the population growth in Texas has been in its major metropolitan areas, and that isn't expected to change. The demographics are changing, and the problems are getting worse. It's time for conservatives to apply our values to urban problems and win over voters in those areas in the process. I'm Charles Blaine with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary.
Well, that's all I've got for you. Join us again next week for more news that empowers you, the taxpayer.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.